Hello, long time no listen. Welcome back to the No Sevens podcast. I'm Caleb, joined as always with David Deloge and Silas Walker. On today's episode, we are reviewing the hotly anticipated, at least by me, Spider-Man No Way Home. The biggest drop of 2021, I think, as far as like box office sales, records, stuff like that. One of the biggest Marvel movies ever, starring, of course, Tom Holland, Zendaya, Benedict Cumberbatch, John Favreau, Willem Dafoe. Oh, there's two Benedicts in this movie? Benedict Wong and Benedict Wright? No way. That's kidding. Marissa Tomei, all these others, a lot of very, very cool people. So I'm not going to go down the whole character list. But welcome back, guys. It's been a minute since we've recorded. And what better way to come back than this terrific movie?
It really has been a while.
Yeah.
Is this like, I forget what it, did we say we were going to watch this at our last
We decided a while ago that we were going to watch this, but so we're a little behind. So just to clear up for our listeners on the timeline, here's what's happened. So our last release was Dune. I think before Dune, we recorded a ghost story, or we watched it at least. There's some conflation around when Dune and a ghost story happened. Ghost story has not been released just because I haven't sat down and edited it. So it's been a hot minute. We've really tapered off in the back half of the year. But you know what? I think I'm fine with that, right? Like, we're doing this for... I'm sorry. We're not really doing this for you listeners. We're mainly just doing this for our own entertainment, which is not to say we don't appreciate you listening, but we would still be doing this even if you guys weren't listening. And that's how you know we're real artists.
Yeah. We haven't sold out. For right. All you six listeners out there, we appreciate you.
And we never will sell out because nobody will ever pay us to do this. But
that's right.
Anyway, long story short, I think in the ghost story or whatever. So our next movie was supposed to be Casablanca. I have not watched Casablanca yet because I still have to get my HBO Max set up. I don't think Caleb has watched it yet either. I don't know. Silas, I know you've watched it.
I saw it the week after we decided to see it.
So
maybe the day after.
Silas is dedicated.
Silas is going to watch it again probably.
Have to watch it again.
That'll probably be our next movie since we already decided that. But since Spider-Man No Way Home has come out, we've all seen it. We all have got hot takes on it. We're just going to sit down and talk it out.
I've seen it twice, baby.
Wow.
I saw it twice in the opening weekend.
Wow. He's double ready.
So I'm amped. My YouTube recommended videos have just completely been consumed by Spider-Man. Like old clips. I mean, it doesn't matter. Anything Spider-Man related, my YouTube recommended feed is full of it. Which, real quick plug, related to the point that I've seen it twice, or that I saw it twice. If any of our listeners are in an area where there are Regal theaters.
Which they all are.
Well, maybe. There's not Regal theaters where I'm from, David. Some of us live in small town USA.
You live in Bowling Green where there are exclusively Regal theaters.
I mean my hometown, my small hometown. Okay. Anyway.
So you're basically, are you addressing your mom right now?
Just anybody. I don't know where people live. I don't know where anybody lives.
We appreciate you listening.
You should sign up for Regal Unlimited subscription. Okay, it's a monthly subscription for a specific fee. It depends on which one you do. But unlimited movies, you can see, literally, you can see five movies a day if you so desire, have that kind of time. And for one monthly fee, it's amazing. As long as you go to the movies twice in 1 month, you've taken advantage of it. You've made money, basically. So that's what I have. Just a quick plug. I'm not sponsored by Red Bull. Wish I was.
This podcast sponsored by Regal.
Hey, we're not selling out.
That's right.
Yeah, but it is cool. I recently signed up for it, and that's why, like, I was, you know, because now I can go see a movie that I might not ever want to see because I'm like, well, you know, I got Regal Unlimited. So, or you can see movies twice and don't feel like you're, you know, wasting money on watching the same movie twice. So anyway, that's just my little plug.
All right, Regal Unlimited. Okay. All right, so we've covered what movie this is, Spider-Man No Way Home. We've covered what's happening in our timeline.
Yep.
Are we ready to get into our non-spoiler reviews?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Caleb, you're up.
Oh, man. I mean, I can't speak highly enough of this film. It was just amazing. Okay, it's an over for me. Above and beyond and over. It's so hard not to spoil it, but just go see it. If you haven't seen it, you got to see it because it'll make all your dreams come true. It's wow. Just amazing. I loved it. I loved it. I mean, both times, I just couldn't get enough of it. I'm a huge Spider-Man fan anyway, if you guys didn't know. Yeah, I mean, it just, I don't know how else to say without getting into the specifics, but it's a must watch and a must. I'm going to own it on DVD. I'm going to go that far.
On DVD.
I'm going to buy this thing on Ultra HD Blu-ray 4K. So that's how I feel about it.
All right. I would say for me, this movie was precisely as stupid as I thought that it would be. It was not more. It was not less. It was exactly the amount of stupid that I thought it would be.
Oh, my goodness.
It's an under for me.
We're about to fight. David, you cannot be for real right now.
I didn't think it was a categorically bad movie, but I think my concerns with it were realized in essentially exactly what I was afraid of.
Oh boy, here we go.
So, I would still say it's definitely worth a watch, especially if you're a Marvel fan. It is a fun movie. Yeah. So, it's not a bad movie, but it is an under for me.
This is unreal. Okay, let's just stop now.
This is what the whole podcast is about. This is going to be like our top episode.
I've got to deal with David. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to the critical thinker of the group. The one who can't enjoy nice things. But anyway.
I can enjoy nice things.
No, go on. Go on, Silas.
It is a fun movie. It is entertaining, worth a watch. It's probably going to be still barely an under for me. I'd have to say.
Holy cow. What is going on? How is this possible? Okay, here we go.
We bring you diverse opinions.
Well, whatever. This is so bonkers to me. All right, well, you guys heard what they had to say about it. I don't know where they're coming from. They must have watched it in a different universe. if you know what I mean.
Should we get into the spoilers?
Yeah, I might as well. I mean, it's going to be a tough episode now. Now that I got two Debbie Downers with me. But hey, let's go ahead. Spoilers.
Three, two, one.
All the Spider-Men come back.
Yeah, died all the Spider-Men.
It's a multiverse, baby. All of them come back. Toby, Andrew, of course, Tom. The villains. It doesn't get much better. I just don't understand what is. Okay. This doesn't make sense to me.
Do you want to start by telling us what you liked about it and more like with now that you're unfettered by spoilers?
Yeah, what I loved about it?
Yeah. Make the case. Yes. Try and convince us.
Well, that's going to be impossible. Sounds like
just
your mind's
but just
made
try
up.
For the benefit of our readers, because maybe some of our listeners are readers. For the benefit, because maybe some of them are like, you know, they want to hear you fight the good fight in favor of Spider-Man.
Okay, well, here it is. First of all, if you grew up at all watching the old Spider-Man, any of the old Spider-Mans, Tobey Maguire's, Andrew Garfield's, this was pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe. These were like the cream of the crop as far as like just, you know, basically action superhero movies. This is what first got me into Spider-Man back in the day, was the Tobey Maguire ones. My grandmother bought me Spider-Man 1 on VHS, rated PG-13 when I was 7 years old. My parents did not like it. And from then on, I was hooked. I mean, I was even hooked before then. But, and so it starts from a very young age, and this movie just pulls it all back together into this amazing, nostalgic masterpiece that gets every heart string. I mean, it pulls you happy, sad, laughing, crying. I didn't cry, but some people did. I could see why you would.
That's true. Some people did. Some people did cry. There was a lot of crying with this movie.
I mean, people watching it probably cried because it's emotional. I thought it had all the good aspect, all the aspects of a great Spider-Man movie. It had the villains, the heroes, the humor, and Tom Holland's Spider-Man finally like grew up a little bit and came full circle. It's like he's finally being Spider-Man again, instead of just like Tony Stark's little sidekick. You know, it was just. I don't know what to say about it. It was just amazing. I thought that the storyline was pretty interesting. It was creative, but not that creative, because it's all like stuff we've heard of before. The multiverse, that's not new. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I just thought it was really fun, really just a good movie.
I could see it being. I get your point about the nostalgia bit. Bring all those in.
Oh yeah. I mean the crowd went wild when I watched it on opening night. People were so excited to see Toby and Andrew.
When we saw it, David, didn't people clap when who's first? Who's the first one?
Andrew Garfield comes back first.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was some murmurs of applause. I actually stood up when Tobey Maguire showed up. I actually stood up and started throwing eggs at the screen.
Oh my goodness! See, we got a Tobey Maguire hater right here.
Okay, so I'll concede your point. I think that if you have a strong emotional connection from your childhood with some of the older Spider-Man movies, particularly the Tobey Maguire trilogy, this is your interpretation of this movie is probably going to be very different, and I think that's valid, right? Because the same thing could be said for, like, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, right? The Force Awakens, objectively, is The Force Awakens objectively that good? No, not really. It's basically A New Hope. But people really enjoyed it because it was kind of this return of these things that we had grown up with and had this emotional connection to. And so for that reason, it felt really great watching it, right? But when you take a step back and look at it, it's like, okay, it's actually not that good. But it really was a great experience watching that movie. So I understand where you're coming from with that. And I'll concede that point. And I will say I don't have that. I would say, if anything, I'm biased against Tobey Maguire. I don't know why, but just for some reason, he just grinds my gears as Spider-Man. I think I just don't resonate with him. And I've felt that way for a long time. That Tobey Maguire is not a good casting choice for Spider-Man. That being said, he is the original casting choice for Spider-Man in the movie context. So, you know, I get that. I get where you're coming from with that. I don't agree that this has all of the elements of a good Spider-Man movie. And I think that's where...
What are the elements of a good Spider-Man movie? Both you and Caleb.
Caleb, you can go first.
Humor, little, I mean, obviously the villains, like the fighting and
yep,
that, you know, has to be good.
And yeah, I agree with that.
So many villains.
That's true.
You know, it needs some good web slinging action.
Yep, I agree with that.
Classic fall scene that happened, that was in this, with Zendaya falling from the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that was amazing. That scene in itself was amazing. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. You think about the first Spider-Man movies, you know, they were, like I said, this was before Marvel Cinematic Universe, and so it was just like each movie was relatively self-contained. You know, there was one main villain. You go through the movie, you defeat the villain. You know, and that's what the whole framework of a superhero movie was before MCU came around and everything kind of intertwined. So, you know, that is what got me going to begin with, and it just kind of like it kind of was refreshing in this movie. That was more similar to what was going on in this movie than other Spider-Man movies in the MCU.
Gotcha. You like that it was self-contained. It was mainly just about Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. That's fair. Let me clarify a little bit. So when I did my non-spoiler thing, and I said that thing about it being precisely as stupid as I thought it would be, I partially said that for comedy and shock value, because I didn't think that it was going to be like monumentally dumb, right? I didn't think it was going to be a complete wash, but I was concerned about the whole having three Spider-Man come back deal. I was concerned about that just being kind of dumb and gimmicky, and that's how I felt about it, right? So I didn't think it was like monumentally dumb. But I didn't necessarily resonate with that part. And that's like a separate issue from what I think is the real strong case for this is a separate thing, I guess, for why I don't think this is an over 7 for me. And here's what it is, okay? One of the key elements of a Spider-Man movie that I think you left out is Spider-Man in particular is so endearing to people because he is... uniquely ordinary, right? In a way that a lot of other superheroes are not, right? Like if you take like Batman, like he's very wealthy, he's very physically fit, like he's got a lot of attributes that aren't really like normal people's day-to-day life. Like he's living this a billionaire life that people can imagine, but it's not something that most people experience, right? Or even inside the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? Tony Stark, same thing. Like Captain America, same thing. They're really easy for us to look up to as ideals of heroism, but they're not as easy for us to relate to in a way that Spider-Man kind of brings it down to earth, right? Because Spider-Man has always been Peter Parker at the same time. Just this kind of normal guy who's trying to make it through life and figure stuff out, same as everybody else, right? He doesn't live his life as a superhero on a pedestal in the way that some of these other superheroes do. Right.
Yeah, he's always got like school or his job or his like love life to balance.
He always has normal problems. And I think that's part of the reason why people gravitate towards him, and he's arguably the most popular superhero. Right? And I think to be fair, I think Spider-Man has maybe as a character, like his character ethos, like the core elements of the Spider-Man character, regardless of like kind of what how you interpret him or like which universe he's from, those core elements uniquely position him for really, really good stories, better than a lot of other superheroes, right? Like Superman, the core elements of Superman's identity don't position him well for that, because basically anything that he comes across, he can just kind of like laser eyes and super strength his way through it, and you have to have these galactic threats every single time in order to have any conflict in a superhero movie. Whereas Spider-Man, you have a lot more potential for really, really good stories with him. So I will grant that as a non-Spider-Man like loyalist. Here's what I think the problem is with No Way Home is it totally falls flat on having an arc of self-development for Peter Parker that was very present in the first two films, right? So the first two films both had very clear development arcs for Peter Parker, right? So in the first film, he's kind of like learning what it really means to be a superhero. And Tony Stark is kind of trying to like mentor him. And Peter Parker is going from this expectation that, oh, you're just going to be kind of like a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man and not really take on real threats, to kind of him proving to himself and to the world that he has what it takes and learning what it takes to actually be a true hero, right? That's kind of like the first Spider-Man Homecoming. That's that one. In the second one, it's kind of like, okay, now Tony Stark is gone. Like, he's lost his mentor and his kind of like guide into like how to do this. He's now figuring it out on his own. And that's where I think, Caleb, that he's actually trying to figure out how to be Spider-Man outside of Tony Stark's shadow, right? Because initially, right, he kind of passes off that role that Tony wanted him to have to Mysterio, and Mysterio kind of manipulates him into that and uses it against him, right? And eventually, like, Spider-Man has to adopt that responsibility and kind of be the hero that Tony Stark wanted him to be, right? So I think that's where he becomes fully fledged Spider-Man. This movie did not have that same clear-cut arc of like who he's transforming into. In fact, it changes like several different times throughout the movie inexplicably, right? So it, like, it starts off and it's like, okay, everybody knows I'm Spider-Man, and my loved ones are getting impacted negatively by that. And so that's kind of like the thing that like sets off the conflict, right? And so if anything, the moral of the story is like Doctor Strange's admonition that like, oh, you need to stop living in two worlds, which doesn't really make sense, because it's not like he's like out here trying to live a double life. It's like his loved ones have been hurt by like people around, like the bad guys around him, and he's trying to protect them from that, which is totally rational and not like a character flaw. Right, it's not like something that he needs to outgrow or like mature from, or like, you know.
Well, and that's like what every superhero does. Like,
right,
the two lies, they all have secret identities.
Yeah, exactly. But that's sort of like the first, like character development, like thing that it's like, okay, that's what he's trying to learn. And then all these villains show up, and then it's like, okay, no, this movie is actually about like Aunt May's like encouraging him to like, hey, take responsibility for the well-being of other people because you have this power. Don't just like focus on what's like your what's best for you alone. Like, take care of other people and whatever, right? And it's like, okay, well, that's what this movie's about now. And then it's like, okay, no, it's like now Aunt May's dead, and like now it's about, oh, you need to like not turn into a like vengeful rage monster. And like that changes again, and it's like by the end of the movie, like his loved ones are still like, it's not like he's like cut off his loved ones, like he's still obviously like hanging around his friends and like going to eventually like have a relationship with them where they're going to be in just as much danger and impact as they were before, right? He was never really like the type of guy who was like going around like not taking responsibility for other people's problems. Like, basically his whole shtick in the first two movies is like trying to help people. So it's not like that's something that has been like a character flaw for him in the past. And he doesn't like stop himself from becoming a vengeful rage monster. Tobey Maguire does. And then he gets stabbed without any consequences, I might add. And Tom Holland's character is just kind of like, oh, okay, whatever. Right. And just kind of like brushes off. There's no actual like shift there in him, like making a choice not to like kill Green Goblin or whatever. He just kind of goes and talks to Doctor Strange after that. Right. There's not really a concrete shift from him exercising forgiveness. So by the end of the movie, externally, his circumstances have changed a lot. Right. Like, he's lost his aunt. Everybody has forgotten him. And he's going back to kind of this grassroots like Spider-Maning thing, but internally he hasn't really changed at all. Like, he's still essentially the same character, and it didn't feel like he had gone through any growth or transformation as a person by the end of the movie. And I think that is where this movie fails, is it was so focused on delivering this kind of like fan service trifecta of all bringing back all the Spider-Man and whatever, that they forgot to have a unifying arc for Peter Parker that we can bring back into our own lives as human beings and see how he, an ordinary guy, deals with these superheroic problems and then can take that and learn something from that in our own day-to-day lives and our own problems. I think that's where this movie, goes under a 7 for me. Because I think that's like an objective flaw in it of what a Spider-Man movie can be and what it wasn't, versus like whether or not I like the fact that Tobey Maguire was in this movie.
I don't know if I really agree with all of that, because I think there was like some character development.
Me too. And okay. Obviously, I don't think about it that deep. So there's not a chance I could have went on for as long as you did. But
Silas, sorry, that was a long rant.
No. That's good, because that, like I said, I don't think like that, you know. So, but Silas, let's hear what you think about the character development.
I get what you're saying, David, and it makes a lot of sense because you always make sense. But, I mean, I think all of those same, the parts that you were saying weren't the same character development, like it was going in different directions. I think those were all kind of tied together. Like his Aunt May and stuff trying to get him to the classic Spider-Man thing, more responsible, like great responsibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's tied into what was the first one where he was like,
he doesn't want his loved ones to get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of the same thing that his Aunt May was like trying to get him to do. It's at least part of that. And then at the end, like he doesn't become a rage monster, kind of because of Garfield, but doesn't he like stab him with the potion thingy to make him not Green Goblin?
That's
anymore?
True.
Yeah.
And then I think you see at the very end, he's like, he's at least being more cautious about involving the people in his life, or he's gonna make different choices maybe than he did in the past, but that's to be determined, I guess. So I think there was a little bit in those areas, and maybe they were tied together a little bit more.
That's fair. I would say that there's definitely things in common with each of those like apparent arcs, so I'll concede that. I guess I wish for me that it was tied together more solidly. I wish that the story had been where do we want to take Peter's character, and then how does the thing we want to do where we like bring back Alfred Molina as Doc Ock, because that would be super cool and nobody else is going to be able to play him better, how do we incorporate that versus the other way around?
Here's what I think for the character development piece. So for the most part, in the first two movies, he lived his life as Spider-Man. You know, I don't have perfect recollection of everything that, you know, all the different character aspects from the first two movies. But he lived his life as Spider-Man, as most superheroes do, with, I would say, maybe not as much regard for how his actions, the consequences his actions have on those around him. And it's not his fault necessarily, but you can't always, like, oh no, I can't save the city now because it's gonna hurt my loved one's potential for getting into college or whatever, you know. So it's not his fault necessarily. But at the beginning of this movie, after his identity is revealed, all of his people around him start getting hurt by it, he finally like steps up and takes responsibility, or tries to at least. And it's like, and it's in my head, he's like, basically everything is my fault. I have to fix everything by myself. And the development that I see throughout the movie is, you know, once the whole thing goes haywire with all the, with Doctor Strange spell and everything, and the multiverse opens up. And then MJ says something, you know, I don't remember exactly how it went, but it was after he went out and tried to do it. It was after he went to Doctor Strange by himself. She's like, hey, next time, why don't you talk to us and let us try to help you do some of these things? Like, about, he's like, well, because I didn't want to hurt you guys. I didn't want to like involve you guys and hurt you even more. It's like he's finally starting to grow up a little bit And like, but at the same time, they want to be a part of his, you know, heroics if they can. If they can help, they want to help. So what does he do? He brings them in so that they can help. So they, in what limited capacity that they can, they start to help him with his objective, you know, of getting all the bad guys rounded up and then potentially going back in time, or not going back in time, but like changing their fate. Okay, so all that happens, but then he fails because Green Goblin goes bad. You know, he turns evil, or doesn't really turn evil, but he stays evil. Obviously, Aunt May pulls the, you know, with great power comes great responsibility card on him. So now he's feeling like the weight of the world is on him and him alone, and he feels defeated because now Aunt May is dead. You know, all these villains are running rampant through the city, except for Doc Ock. He's a good guy. I love Doc Ock.
Randomly.
Yeah. Well, he finally got the chip restored for his brain, which it's kind of funny because as a kid, like, I had no idea what any of that was. Like, I just, like, all you know is Doc Ock is a bad guy. You don't think about, like, oh, that tiny little microchip, like, ruptured and that's what caused him to be bad. So, but then he's at, like, the lowest point of his life because it's just crumbling. And he's like, I can't fix this. And the two Spider-Men come back. And they, you know, they bring their Spider-Man experiences from their own universe. They kind of help Peter. They coach him up. And then they all work together to solve the main problem. And at the end, yes, Peter becomes a little rageful towards the Green Goblin, which, I mean, honestly, rightfully so. And that fight scene was just incredible. The fight scenes in this movie were just, when he was wailing on the Green Goblin there at the end, like, it was just, and picking him up and just, I mean, slamming him, those were just awesome. Like, talk about just amazing action sequences. But anyway, and then I think the way that his character arc finishes up at the end, he puts his desires aside because, I mean, like, you know, at first he wants everyone to forget who Spider-Man is. But think about that. What's even worse than that? Forgetting who Peter Parker is. You know, like, it's one thing for somebody not to know that you're a superhero, for them to not know you at all. Like, that's so hard. But he tells Doctor Strange, yes, that's what I want. Just do it. And he's like, finally, he takes responsibility for what has happened because of his actions. He puts his, I would say, his own, you know, desires aside. And now he's like, In some way, he's finally fixed everything. But it's going to be really hard for him now to go back and reintroduce himself to his friends and all these other people. I just think he matures a lot as a hero. And to me, that was what I got from the character development. It wasn't as splintered as what David, you know, initially proposed. But that was, I mean, even that was secondary for me. Like, I was just in it for the action. And seeing all the villains come back, I mean, it was just, I don't know, it was just incredible.
That was well said, Caleb. That's
good.
Yeah, I don't know if I fully agree with you, but I will concede that the teamwork angle was something I underappreciated.
So David's just a Spider-Man hater.
I'm not a I like Spider-Man. I enjoy Spider-Man. Now, Tom Holland is my favorite Spider-Man.
He's a full hater of Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, I just, man.
So just the character development was like your biggest issue with that, David.
The character development is what I think is its largest objective flaw. However, I also had major issues with having all the Spider-Man come back.
Yeah, that wasn't really my biggest one. It was more, my issues with it were like the crying and the, I guess more so that it relied on all the Spider-Men, like that dynamic of, oh, you're Spider-Man, I'm Spider-Man. You're Peter Parker, I'm Peter Parker.
Yeah, so the... Let's just get into this. I think this is less objective, right? Because some people wanted that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And but it was to entertaining me, to a certain point.
It was. Okay, so there's space for that, okay? There's space for that humor. But it was just like from the time that Andrew Garfield and Toby showed up, basically to the end of the movie, the entire movie was just that meme of like the two Spider-Man like pointing at each other. It was that meme in various different forms for like an hour or whatever, however long they were on screen. And it was just like a lot, right? And there's some space for that, those jokes, right? Crack a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Keep your best ones in there, but then let it go, you know? Do something else. Have them play off each other in a way that doesn't revolve around the fact that I'm Spider-Man and you're also Spider-Man, you know? Like, I don't know. So that was hard for me to get a handle on. It was just a lot. It was hard. It got difficult for me to take seriously. Yeah.
I think that's part of who Spider-Man is, though. He's not all serious.
Right, but I mean it was hard for me to take seriously as a good good writing, right? It was like getting into like overly cheesy territory, right? Like you can be nuts. Overuse. You can be funny and do it well. And not take yourself seriously. But this was hard for me to take seriously. Like, it was hard for me to respect it, I guess. This is maybe a better way to put it. So, it was just a lot of those jokes. And it was a lot. And, okay, and, like, the thing where, like, MJ is, like, falling and, like, Tom Holland's trying to catch her and then he gets hit by the glider and then Andrew Garfield, like, saves her and it's, like, his redemption. That was just too... That was just too scripted for me. I mean, I realized the whole thing was scripted, but it was like, it was just too good
too
of
forced
a
forced or
it was yeah too forced, right? Because as soon as I saw the trailer and as soon as I saw that in the trailer, I knew that was gonna happen. I knew that they were gonna write that in, and it just didn't. I think that doesn't work for me. Because it was so predictable and so it was low hanging fruit. And they just didn't have any shame about going for it. I think that was hard for me. And also, Tobey Maguire talks so slow. He shows up and he like starts talking. I'm like, just spit it out, man. What do you want? What are you trying to say here? Move along.
He's and a Tobey Maguire hater.
All right, we've released our criticism of it, but what would you like about this movie, David?
I did like the music. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be overly negative, but
oh, too late.
Yeah, I did like the music. Michael Giacchino, as always, knocks it out of the park.
I didn't even notice the music.
Well, I have listened to the music separately.
Of course,
I like
as
that.
He always
I
does.
Like it. Yeah, it's good. I mean, it wasn't that impressive in the movie, but
which is like the whole point of it.
But it just kind of flows. It's not like the greatest soundtrack of all time, but it flows, right? Okay. It flows with the movie. It's like it's not like you're not like, oh, the music here is terrible, right? It just kind of flows with the thing, and he's got some good stuff going on. Was it as good as Far From Home? Hard to say, but it was good.
Yeah, so I don't remember the music from Far From Home at all.
I enjoyed some of the humor parts. One of my highlights was the scene with Ned in the lab.
Yes, that was funny. That was really funny. I did like that. I was one of the only people who laughed at that in our theater. I don't know why, but that was funny.
What, when he talked about it, he's like, I will never.
Yeah.
When he was like, did you have a best friend? And he was like, yeah. But I had to kill him when he turned evil and tried to kill me. It was tragic. And I was like one of the only people who like laughed out loud at that. The rest of the theater was just silent. So, but that was funny. So, that yeah, I was maybe too harsh about the whole multi-Spider-Man thing. They did some stuff well. But it was just a lot. And
William Dafoe is also a perfect villain. Like, he was just born to be a villain.
Yeah, he's a good actor. He plays it really well. I had no idea, like, kind of through it. There was some point, like, when you were supposed to know that he was Norman Osborn or Green Goblin, I knew. When you weren't, I didn't know. And like kind of when they were at that safe house, I was kind of like, is he still good? Like, seems like he is, but maybe not.
Who's your favorite Spider-Man, Caleb?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know. That's a tough one because this is where the Spider-Man nerds come out, and they start talking about Toby's the best Peter Parker, Andrew's the best Spider-Man, but Tom is like a great mixture of both. I couldn't care less about any of that. I don't know. I didn't read the comics. I don't do any of that. And so to me, it's all one and the same. It's just Spider-Man. You're just Spider-Man. So
when's the last time you watched the old Spider-Man?
Oh, I mean, it's been years. I mean, I've been seeing a lot of clips and highlights and stuff on my YouTube. And so I've been watching some of those. And I will fully concede that, especially Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man 3 is not a good movie. Like, I get that. And I don't even think Tobey Maguire is like the best actor or whatever, but it's from a pure nostalgia thing. It's just like, you know, that's just what we knew. And looking back, you're like, wow, there were some cool aspects about Toby and Andrew and everybody. You know, Tom, just because he's been like the biggest by far as far as like a movie star. Like, I mean, he's gotten the most press, the most, you know, everything just because he's in the MCU.
Yeah.
And in like the social media age, everybody just loves him. Which he's a cool guy. Like he seems like a cool guy. I don't know him, unfortunately. But I don't know. I mean, probably Tom, just because he's the most recent, probably like the one that I've been most that has had the biggest impression on me.
Right.
From like a stage of life, and I mean, you know, even for the Amazing Spider-Man, I was in high school. I went and saw the movies, but I didn't like, you know, think much about them outside of that, and there wasn't a lot of buzz around. Like, you know, I didn't sit around and like watch YouTube videos about Andrew Garfield. So I just think from a purely like timing and stage of life, Tom is probably my favorite.
Yeah.
But I can see now, like knowing a little bit more about the quote unquote character of Spider-Man, like who he was, I can respect certain aspects about each of them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And a lot of people were talking about how they loved Andrew in this movie, like almost the most, because they thought he was like, you know, had like the best acting, and like, you know, because of his trauma with like losing Gwen and stuff, that it like helped him be really good in this movie. I don't know.
He was good.
He was good. He was
good. And I'm sorry. Look, I feel like I've characterized myself that I just hated this movie. I did not.
Yeah. You need to apologize. But
I just, so if you're, you know, if you're one of those diehard Spider-Man fans, shoot me a text. We'll hash it out.
I think Tom Holland is probably arguably, in my opinion, he's probably the best actor of the three. So,
agree.
Oh yeah, 100%.
He's really, I mean, he's a really good actor. Like yeah. his American accent is impeccable.
Oh yeah. So. I also just want to throw this out there. I really loved J. Jonah Jameson's role in this movie. Always loved J. Jonah Jameson, but I thought it was hilarious that he had like a come up from doing his TV station thing from home with his little pathetic green screen to like running a news channel. It's pretty impressive. Good for you, J. Jonah Jameson, even if you are a jerk.
That's the media coming out of Silas.
Oh yeah,
big media guy.
But not in like a bad way.
Yeah.
No. Oh, sorry. No. Let's see. What else did we like about it? I mean, for me, mostly everything.
How did you feel about the MJ relationship? Did that work for you? Did that feel good?
It has always seemed weird to me because
she's just a little bit taller than him. Well,
Not because of that exclusively. But I guess it helps being Spider-Man, you know. The height difference probably doesn't seem as important.
I like that they keep that in the movie. Like, in that scene at the end where they're, like, looking at each other. Like
they don't try subtle. To shoot it in a way that...
Yeah, it's like subtle, even. But you can tell, you know what? She is taller. She's just a little bit taller.
They don't give respect him the fact a box. That they,
yeah, I respect the fact yeah. that they're like, hey, this is just the way it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just think it's always seemed weird just because, like, their personality seems so much different. But maybe that's why, you know, that's maybe why they get along so well. I mean, opposites attract or whatever. I don't know. It just... I like it now. Like, it's very endearing now. But, like, the first movie especially, at the very end, because basically the very end of the first movie, I think, is, like, the first time that she's like, oh, I go by MJ. And then, I mean, like, everybody's like, oh, okay, that's the MJ. And it didn't seem right. But I think now at the end, it's been nice to see her kind of warm up a little bit to him and vice versa. So, yeah, I mean, I like it.
Something still seems off about it to me. I think we were talking about it maybe, David, after we saw it, but I can't. I don't know. Something just doesn't seem yeah. like it's developed well enough.
I think you were saying that it just felt a little teenagery to you. And yeah. They're teenagers, so it's realistic, but in kind of like a little bit of the like Twilight vibe of it's like, I hadn't noticed it until you mentioned it, but like, I feel like I just like tuned out like most of their like romantic couple conversations.
Mm. Yeah.
I did like how at the end they kind of showed that he's been like going back to that coffee shop and like building a relationship with her.
Yeah, that was nice. That was nice.
Yeah.
So I did like that. I have no idea how he's paying for that apartment or why he's taking the GED, but.
Because he had to drop out of high school.
I guess, I don't know why he's studying for the GED.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
At least that, like.
And I think also, I haven't verified this or even looked it up, but for some reason that apartment he moves into looks super familiar, like it was one of Tobey Maguire's first apartments.
That'd be cool.
And I think that would be cool too.
Throwback.
Yeah.
And some people like made some murmurs whenever that popped up in the theater. So I'm thinking maybe that was another little callback to one of the first Spider-Man. Yeah. Okay. Are there things? Well, David, you've already kind of talked about what you didn't like. Are there other things we didn't like?
I don't think so. I thought it was funny. You know what I didn't like? I didn't like the fact that Doctor Strange, the adult in this situation, is just pawning off all the responsibility onto Peter Parker.
True.
I think we're going to see some comeuppance for that in Multiverse of Madness. You know? Because, I mean, let's be real here. You know? You're the adult and the former Sorcerer Supreme. He's a 15-year-old kid. I think he's like 18, but whatever. He's a kid, you know? Maybe you should do a little more
heavy lifting there.
Yeah, you know, or just kind of like, don't jump straight to doing the dangerous spell that Wong told you not to do and instead listen to the 18-year-old kid. Right? True. And then maybe sit down and have a conversation with this kid about exactly what you need to make happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Before you start casting the spell.
That's something I can criticize. Like, I mean, because I think, yeah, you're right. Because it's like, first of all, even like you said, maybe you need to tell Peter, hey, this is how the spell works. Are there any write-ins you want me to know before I start casting this thing? You know? And then even though he doesn't do that and he starts to cast a spell and Peter's like, hey, wait. I mean, I don't know how the magic thing works, but I feel like at some point he can say, okay, all right, just put his hands down and stop casting the spell.
Yeah. Which he did. Like,
yeah, he did, but like way too late. But at the same time, it's like, it also is annoying that Peter is like, he keeps adding stuff in. It's like, dude, you see what this is doing, right? Like, Doctor Strange has told you to stop doing this, but he's like, oh, but wait. Like, I don't see why it's so hard to have to re-explain to Aunt May or whoever, like, that you're Spider-Man. Like, just leave. It's okay to leave a couple people out, but I don't know. Of course, I've never had to do something like that, unfortunately.
I don't think I would feel that way if I were Spider-Man, but I do think basically the thing that sets everything wrong is, has nothing to do with Peter. It has to do with the fact that Doctor Strange was not good enough to cast the spell correctly or to abort at the appropriate time.
Yes.
Right? So I feel like a lot of this was really on him, and he was kind of like, hey, this is your mess, Peter. You clean it up. When it's kind of like, you're the adult here.
Yeah.
You're the magician guy who cast the spell in the first place. He was just trying to figure stuff out. Maybe you should, you know, take a little responsibility.
This is true.
So that was actually, it has nothing to do with the plot. That just has to do with me and my relationship with Doctor Strange within the universe itself. I think that's actually probably going to be a plot point of Multiverse of Madness based on the trailer. Because it seems like it's basically like Wong being like, hey, you cast the spell I told you not to. And now everything is messed up. So we'll see. Also, I thought they did a good job of telling the story inside of the Marvel Universe. And not if you didn't have to really have a whole lot of context.
Yeah, that's true.
Like the whole mirror dimension thing, they did a great job of just incorporating that without you having to super be like, what's going on? Like, he was just like, it's the mirror dimension where I'm in control. I was like, that's a really good way to sum that up.
I mean, to be honest, I've not even seen the second Spider-Man movie, so. And I wasn't lost at all, so.
Yeah, so good job there, writers.
Yeah. Well, I don't really have any other good or bad things to say. I mean, I think me seeing it twice in opening weekend and gonna buy it on DVD says all it needs to say. But I loved it. I mean, I will continue to recommend it and rave about it for the next, you know, at least week or so.
All right. Well, should we do we have any trivia?
Yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch didn't even read the whole script. He wanted to surprise himself by seeing the final product. And also, Ned lost 102 pounds for this movie.
What?
That's so much weight.
I knew he had lost like weight, but I didn't know if it was related to this movie.
Yeah. He's also bald.
Yeah, he's bald.
Yeah, that's true.
He was a wig, I guess. And Tom Holland helped save this movie from cancellation by forcing negotiations between Sony and Disney.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that happened.
Yeah.
I remember hearing about that in the news.
Spider-Man can also appear in future MCU movies, as well as Sony's own Spider-Man franchise. So there's some weird dual ownership of Spider-Man.
That was another thing I didn't like about this movie was the Venom post-credit scene. I thought that was silly.
Oh, well, did you see Venom 2?
No, but I just thought it was silly that they left behind a little bit of symbiote. Because that doesn't make any sense.
Just leaves the door open.
Yeah, but they don't need him to... They could have their own symbiote in his universe. They don't need a symbiote to come from a different universe in order to exist in that universe. They could just have their own.
And what? If Tom Hardy came from another universe, why was he just chilling, like, at a tiki bar?
That I don't have as much of an issue with.
All right. It's all from Venom 2.
Oh, okay.
The way that he got down there. Basically, if I remember correctly, he just went down there like to exile himself from the city. Because he was tired of everything that was going on, basically.
Gotcha.
So he was down there in Mexico just as like a escape. And at the end of Venom 2, he gets pulled into Tom Holland's universe.
Right.
And that's where it all happened.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I understand why he was there. I just didn't like the fact that they left behind Symbiote specifically.
Yeah.
Because that I think is lazy writing. They're just gonna, anytime they want to do something, they're just gonna be like multiverse, and instead of just coming up with a good narrative for how stuff happens, you know. That's what I have to take issue with. And also, there's no reason why Venom doesn't just leak like Symbiote, and there's no reason why when everybody got sent back to their own universe, that random bit behind would stay, because it's magic. It's not like there's some reason that random little blip of Symbiote would be able to avoid the magic. That's what I didn't like. Anyway. Ooh. Sorry, we got sidetracked with things I didn't like.
That's all of our trivia anyways. So there you have it.
The official right. No Sevens review.
Yeah.
Are we doing Casablanca next or something
else? Yeah. But we need to give our official ratings.
Oh, yeah.
For this movie. I tell you what. I was going to give this a 6. But Caleb, since you made such a good case, and Silas too, but since you made such a good case in favor of some of its attributes, I will bump it up to a 7 if you like and break the rules just for you. Yes. Just like Doctor Strange did for Toby.
Yes, yes. Tom Perfect. Holland. I would love that.
I'll also give it a 7.
Yes! Victory! Victory! well, I'm going to give it... I mean, I can't give it a 10. But
can't
boy,
give it a 10.
It's, well, I just don't know. I mean, I
You're
just feel
to
like...
give 10s.
Yeah, we can give 10s.
I know we can give 10s.
It's not called
well,
no 10s.
All right. All right, you know what? I'm giving this one a 10. Wow. I love
10
it.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. I'm going to... New year, new rating. I've never given a movie a 10, but I love this
oh,
one.
Oh, your first 10?
I don't think I have either.
I don't think any of us have. First 10 on No Sevens.
Yeah, and I'm proud to do it.
Not a unanimous 10, but still.
This is true.
I would be surprised.
Do you think there'll ever be a?
I don't think there would ever be a
movie that
10.
We all three agree is a 10 out of 10.
Oh, I'd be shocked.
That'd be a pretty good movie.
Yeah, then you really know it's a good movie.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess our next movie is Casablanca, coming up on the 80th anniversary of Casablanca.
Wow. That's right.
So, I don't know when the actual 80th anniversary is, but it's coming up. May have already passed, to be honest. I don't know. But we're going to watch it, and we're going to review it. I think it's going to be very different from this movie. I think also The Godfather has like a 50th anniversary this year or something like that.
January 26th is the 80th anniversary.
Oh, so we might just come up right on time. Maybe we could release it on... Is that a Monday?
Wednesday.
Well, we can release it the Monday before, maybe. I don't want to make any hard commitments because I'm the guy who has to do all the editing. So, but we'll try. We'll see. For all you hardcore Casablanca fans out there, see if we can't get it out there in time for the 80th anniversary. All right. Well, I think that's everything.
All right. Thanks for listening. Peace.